I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita.
Good evening, Vashon Island. Welcome to the Cats and Jammer Follies. I am your host, Megan Hastings, and this is KVSH, Voice of Vashon 101.9. Today we have one of my dear friends, Amanda Kelly's mother, on the show. Welcome, Clara Kelly. She's going to share with us a story of perseverance, strength, and above all, courage. She, as a child, and her family spent 4 years during World War II as a prisoner of war in Java, Indonesia, held by the Japanese invaders. Clara is here today to tell us about her story and her time during World War II.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Megan. I feel very touched. I've hardly, you know, moved on to Vashon, but I love every minute already. And here I am telling my story.
Well,
thank you so much.
An amazing story, and more people should hear about it. And she wrote a book, and it's called The Flamboyantry. When did you write it?
In 2002. And it hasn't stopped asking for readings and talks. And
yeah.
It's been an amazing, amazing trip with this book, which I never expected.
Well, maybe you'll get to go to the school here on Vashon and tell the kids about it.
I will gladly do that. I've done a lot of schools.
Yeah, that's what Amanda was telling me.
Yes,
telling
and, the children ask the best questions. And I think everybody should know. You know, unfortunately, Americans don't know much about what happened in World War II in the Asian islands. And
Will you back it up for us and tell us how it happened?
Okay. My father had an export-import business of spices, sugar, rubber, tea.
From Holland, you're originally...
Coffee. Yes, my parents are Dutch, and they met in Holland, married in Holland, and then for my father's business, we went to Ceylon. They went to Ceylon, where my older brother Willem and I were born. And when I was about a baby, he was older, we moved to Java because that my father thought that was better for his business of
import export
of tea, rubber, sugar, coffee, spices, all those kind of things. And we lived a beautiful, wonderful life. Java is such a beautiful island, and we had all the comforts.
It's amazing that you can say that even after everything happened to you.
You know, war is a crazy time, and everybody sort of loses.
Everybody does lose,
yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. And so we were having a wonderful time. We enjoyed it. It was beautiful until the Japanese invaded. World War II had started. And very, very quickly, the Japanese took over. They invaded the island. They took as many men as they could off the island, and that included my father. And took them to Burma into camps. And the women were left behind. Women and children were also put into concentration camps.
So you and your two siblings and your mother were placed in the concentration camp with
yes.
about how many other families?
Oh, I mean, there were like 5,000 to 10,000 in the camp that I was in. And there were about 9 or 10 different concentration camps. And when
on this island alone.
On Java alone. And my mother was highly pregnant with her third child. And so we went into hiding in the basement or the cellar of the house where we lived. And we had some friends, some Swiss friends, who would supply us with food and whatever we needed while we hid in the cellar.
And they were not in the concentration camps.
They were never in being Swiss, they were never taken prisoner.
Is that just because Switzerland is a neutral country?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And they were good friends, so they really tried to help us out. And
you're very lucky that you had them.
Absolutely. And so when finally, and we, a big table, a very sturdy table had been built in the cellar in case of bombs, you know, falling on the house. And then the table, they hoped, would support the little house that, mm-hmm. that we lived in. And we had servants at that time.
And still?
Still, yes. But they all fled because they were getting very frightened that they might end up in one of these camps.
Rightfully so.
Yeah. So we relied very much on the two Swiss people called the Müngers, Mr. and Mrs. Münger. And whatever we needed, they were able to bring to us. And we hid under this great big sturdy table. We had a bucket in the corner for the toilet. And just buckets of water that they would bring down for us. Then when my mother finally went into labor, Mr. Münger rushed her to the hospital. And we didn't know this. We were fast asleep under the table. Wow. And when we woke up in the morning, it was so strange not to have my mother there. We started to go up the stairs very quietly. And the house was so quiet. And we suddenly called out for my mother. And she wasn't there. But then Mrs. Münger came down and she said, you have, your mommy is in the hospital. You have a little baby brother now and you can go and see the brother.
I'm surprised that you guys, that, I mean, obviously it's no easy task to give birth at home, but I'm surprised with that much fear that she would want to leave.
Yes, in those days, if you had a baby, we even kept in the hospital for 10 days. But of course that didn't happen here.
Right.
But anyway, we were allowed to go with them to the hospital and see this new baby brother. But within days, we were told, my mother came home, which is very unusual, so quickly, you know, after mm-hmm. giving birth. And we were told to get ready. We could only take with us into the camp, concentration camp, what we could carry. And so she, you know, what could she carry? You know, she had a newborn baby. I was 4, my brother was 5. So anyway, she packed 2 suitcases and she was extremely wise in how she packed.
What was her name?
And mine was also Clara.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm named after my mother. And she, instead of putting fancy clothes and things like that, which a lot of the prisoners did when they were told to pack up, she put in sheets and towels and lots of bottles of cod liver oil, and there, you know, there's the cod liver oil.
Yeah.
And
what did she bring the cod liver oil for?
Because she thought that we might need some good sustenance. You know, she didn't know what the food was going to be like. It certainly wasn't going to be a restaurant.
No,
and
of
so,
course.
And she packed it all in, and the last thing she packed in was a painting of a flamboyant tree, which she loved. When she first got married, and she and her new husband moved to Java, she saw this painting, an oil painting, in a gallery, and she thought, I've got to have that painting for my home. Mm-hmm. And so now she's being told to pack up and only what she could carry.
And she grabbed that,
and
hence
she
the name
took
of the book.
The painting out of the frame and stuck it in the suitcase with the other things. I have that painting.
It sits
in
here
my
on
house.
Bashan Island.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
And then when I give book talks, I always take the painting with me, and people just burst into tears because it's just so beautiful and so moving.
I'd love to come over and see
yes,
it sometime.
And yeah, so I do that all the time. Take it to schools, and I let the children hold the painting because it's so special.
Yeah,
it's so special, and so. Finally, that awful screaming of the Japanese soldiers were banging on the doors. And
that must have just been so alarming.
As a child,
you're
completely
not understanding
anything. And they had these guns with bayonets on the end. And because we weren't moving fast enough, and my mother's carrying a baby, and she's trying to, you know,
carry
we were
suitcases.
Little and carry the suitcases, and they weren't about to help. She also had to bring a mattress. So
how did she do all that?
Well, some of the prisoners that were already on the trucks came down
and helped
get this all onto the truck.
And how long had your father already been gone then?
He probably a month or so.
Okay.
I can't quite remember. And so he didn't even know
what
this baby was, you know, whether he had another daughter or a son. He was in the jungle already in Burma, you know, cutting down the trees because they had to make this railroad that led to the bridge on the River Kwai. So he, you know, and these were businessmen. These weren't laborers.
Yeah, they didn't know what they were doing.
No. So he had a really, really bad time. But I think no worse than women and children in these camps.
Yeah.
So anyways, we managed to get everything onto the truck. The worst thing we had forgotten were hats, because in that heat, you know, very, very hot climate, sunshine, and driving in, stuffed in with other prisoners to take
And how long were you on the truck to take you to the camp?
It could be all day, because it kept making stops, you know, different when new prisoners had been discovered, like us.
Yeah.
And all piled onto these trucks in the boiling heat. And my poor mother had forgotten to bring any water at all, but most people had some water. And
were they sharing with you?
They tried to share. And also the islanders, the people, the natives of Java,
mm-hmm.
would run up to the trucks with water to give us, but they were pushed away. The water was thrown away.
They weren't allowed to give it to you.
So finally, we arrived in the camp. My mother still hoped that it would still be decent enough, you know, a nice little house to live in, etc. But she knew straight away when the gates were open to let us in, and the crowds of people all waving, you know, trying to recognize you. Luckily, my mother saw a friend of hers in the crowd surrounding the trucks, and she handed the baby to this woman.
And were most of the people that were in this concentration camp, were they Dutch?
Yes. They're actually Dutch, New Zealand, Australian.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there were any Americans, but mostly Dutch. And
were there so many Dutch people there as other business people of import-export? That's why there were so many?
Well, just lots and lots of Dutch people lived on the island. You know, all kinds of businesses were going on there. And it was a wonderful life. It was such a beautiful island with so many gorgeous fruits and flowers.
Have you ever gone back as an adult?
No, I never have.
Yeah.
My father has. He went back to see where the concentration camp for us was. And
because he didn't see it.
No, he didn't see it. But he knew, he was told where it was. He just looked around. But I've never wanted to see it, never.
So during those 4 years, Amanda tells a story about your mom making Christmas ornaments and trying to make
the best of things. We weren't...
Will you tell me a couple of those kinds of stories?
Yes, we weren't aware, of course, of calendar days. But everybody was talking about Christmas coming. And we knew we weren't going to have any cookies or things like that. So out of, I remember, a white child's sock, my mother made a little doll for me.
Mm.
And for Gijs, that's my younger brother, the baby, she had some cloth that she made. It was flowered, but she made an elephant, a cuddly toy for him. And for Willem, my older brother, she wrote some stories on, she had smuggled some paper and pencils, which you weren't supposed to do, but she wrote out stories for him because she needed to teach him how to read. So that's
what an amazing woman she was.
You know, and for that particular Christmas that I'm talking about.
Do you still have that doll?
No, you know, I gave it away, and I regret it terribly because it was my younger brother's birthday and I wanted to give him a birthday present. So I exchanged that doll for a dog on wheels that he could ride.
Oh.
and then we left that dog behind when we escaped.
Well, your heart was certainly in the right place.
I really regret giving that doll away because it would have been nice to have kept, you know.
Yeah.
But... she always was making nice things for us with what little you had. I mean, you really had nothing.
So did you, were you, I mean, you were four when you first got there. So she was also teaching you how to read and write and.
No, it wasn't allowed. You weren't, they, you know, because some women did try to have little classes, wasn't allowed. They didn't want you to start learning to read and stuff. But my mother, Willem was of the right age, you know, yeah. And he desperately wanted to read. And he became the longest reader, you know. I mean, he read every book and read so much. It stayed with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just an arts.
And what would you do on like a daily?
Well, we'd play with other children. We didn't have any toys, but if you managed to get some water, and water was scarce, but there was lots of sand. It was very dry earth, you know, lots of sand, and we would make little cakes, you know, paddy cakes and that kind of stuff with the water and the sand, or we'd make paths in the sand and with stones pretend that they were animals, you know, that we had a farm and things mm-hmm. going
And what were the guards like to you?
Some, they weren't allowed to like you. They, you know, you kept your distance. They had their guns, and they had to pass you by if they thought that the commandant, who unfortunately turned out to be the meanest, the cruelest commandant of all the concentration camps. There were 9 or 10 concentration camps on Java, and we were blessed to have the worst commandant, Soné.
That's not quite a blessing.
Yeah. And he was super, super. He was also crazy. And when the moon was out, he would try to climb the highest tree and reach the moon. And, you know, and all the women would be standing around at the bottom of the tree, hoping and praying that he would fall out and break his neck. But it never happened, unfortunately.
Too bad it didn't.
But, yes, we had to abuse ourselves. And when the monsoon started, the rains, which last for several months, that was heaven. That was heaven, because now, you know, we didn't have enough water to bathe. Mm-hmm. You got 2 buckets of water a day. And that was for everything, for drinking.
And what did they give you for food?
Don't even ask. It was so bad. Rice, mostly. And it was soggy, gray, filthy, dirty rice. A spoonful per meal. And
Per person.
And my mother, you know, they had broken. Several times a day, we were called out with sirens and stuff like that. You had to stand in front of your, where you lived, yeah, right, where you hung out.
Yeah.
And this was a filthy, dirty little single garage with 3 other families. I mean, we were in a dirty little corner with the rats and everything else.
Oh, Clara.
But what was I talking about? The what we did during the day?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what kind of food? And
oh, the food. Yes. Once a day, a big bowl of rice, horrible brown, soggy rice, would appear at a table at the front of the house in the driveway. And
already cooked, or you cooked
already
it?
Cooked.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, they didn't give you kitchens,
on
obviously.
On logs, you know, I mean, it was a terrible job for people who had to do the cooking for all these thousands of people.
And were they cots for sleeping?
For where they went?
What were the sleeping conditions?
The sleeping conditions was the mattress that we had brought with us.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And that was at one corner of the, and we all slept on that. For 4 years, so you can imagine it was, you know, no sheets, just filthy, dirty mattress.
Did it ever get cold?
Cold, no. That would have been a blessing.
For that.
No, but filthy, dirty. The rats, you know, of course, came in to look for food. Anything you hid in the way of food, you did not want to hide it on your body because the rats would find it. And
like when you were sleeping, they would come up to you.
Yeah.
So after the 4 years, and Japan obviously lost, you were able to leave, and how long was it before you found your father, and how was the exit?
You know, we heard that the war was over by the planes were starting to fly very low, little planes over the camps, and we'd all rush out and look at the planes, and sometimes they'd throw out candies, And mostly it was pieces of paper with messages on it. I mean, it looked like snow coming down, you know.
And who was doing that?
The Americans.
The Americans.
And the English.
Okay.
The English. And they were throwing down these messages that the war is nearly over, you know, hang in there. And we're coming to get you, et cetera, et cetera. So we'd be so excited when we would see those planes coming, and everybody collected the papers.
Were you able to save any of them?
No. You know, we had this tattered old suitcase that was the only thing that was left after the 4 years in that camp. But and in that suitcase was the painting that we still...
The flamboyant tree painting.
Yeah, that we still had with us. And it was totally amazing that they never ripped it off the wall. And
I'm surprised that you actually had it up.
Yes, it was so dark, you know. It's a single tiny little garage, if you can imagine that, you know, in the tropics.
Yeah, that sucks.
And then tiny little corner with three other families, you know, in the other corners.
And did you get along with the other families?
Not really. You know, people were always fighting or crying or getting upset. And the sad part was when the women died, the mothers, you know, and then left the children. And life was so difficult that you didn't quickly, you know, get hold of that child who now had lost its mother and had no one to look after it. My mother had three, so she could not afford to get think of it.
How could she? Yeah.
And there were so many.
So where would they go?
These children.
Would they die?
A lot of them, yes, yeah. Because you know, you couldn't share your food. You had little enough as it was, and so they weren't going to give you extra because you're feeding an extra child. So these children, you would hear them crying in the nights as they're walking in the streets, you know, bunch of kids. And it was really sad.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I would say that's really intense.
Yeah. But those Swiss people who in the beginning were so helpful, getting us food and stuff like that when we went into hiding. Now that the war was almost over, we were allowed to have visitors. And so they came in with bags full of food, you know, and they were told at the gates where we were, because every prisoner had a number. And I remember Heiss, my younger brother, and myself, we were making, playing with the sand and the water and making all kinds of things. And then my name in Dutch is Klaartje. And
will you say it one more time?
Klaartje.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, that means little Clara. We were so intent on playing that we didn't even see this perfectly dressed couple with these big bags of goodies. But suddenly I hear my name, Klaartje. And I looked up, you know, and we were filthy. What those people must have thought. I mean, we were...
I'm surprised scrags. They could even recognize you.
I know. And so I stood up and I said, yes. And she said, you don't recognize us, do you? And I didn't know who they were, so I was frightened. We were frightened of other people, and
so makes sense.
I just said, my mom's in there, mommy's in there, and that was the end of the garage. And they said, okay, thank you, we'll go and see her. And so they walked over to the... it was a hole in the wall that was our door, because my mother had hung sheets to separate us from the other families. And so all of a sudden we hear all this screaming and crying, and my mother was really crying because here were the friends and they had brought these bags of food. And Gijs and I were rather taken aback by all this crying with them and my mom, you know. So we went to see if my mom was okay. And no, but they were all hugging and kissing and so happy. And so then the Swiss people started handing out like sponge cake. You know, it's my very favorite, sponge cake.
To this day, I
will eat
imagine it
anytime, sponge cake. And so they gave us little slices. And I remember, and then my mom says, okay, you take these outside she said, and eat these outside, because she wanted to spend time alone
with them,
with her friends. And so we sat there, and we didn't take a thing up. We just looked at it. We didn't really know what it was. It looked so good, that gray rice that we've been eating.
It'd be
all
a shock to your system to have all that sugar after 4 years of just eating rice every day.
So it was done. And then we took a bite, and oh my gosh, we had never tasted anything so wonderful in our lives. I love sponge cake to this day. Sponge cake anytime. So anyway, as time went on, some of the days were very, very difficult. 3.5-4 years, that's a long time. So when people are dying around you, and things were getting worse and worse, the tortures that were happening, and children had to look at the tortures. They would call us all into the streets, and you had to stand there. And it was hotsike, which meant bow. And you stayed, and you had to, there was a special way to bow. And if you didn't do it properly, you got whacked over the head with the back of the gun,
Right.
And you didn't stand up until they told you that you could. So we were all in line. Two women, this was maybe after 2 years being in the camp, the commandant, he was making the camp smaller by pulling in the barbed wire, and more people from other camps were brought into our camp. I mean, we were chock-a-block full to bursting. The toilets didn't work anymore. The taps at the
for the water, the pump.
It was brown and filthy. I mean, we were at our very lowest, and you were always counted. The Japs always thought that somebody had escaped. I don't know. It's an island. Where are you going to escape to? It's filled with all these camps. And so they were always counting us. But you weren't supposed to move. But if somebody moved or if some child cried, then they got confused and the counting had to start all over again because they had forgotten what number they had counted to. And if you moved out of line, you would be hit hard with the butt of the rifle.
The gun.
And these two women had been brought in from the camp from another camp for some reason, I don't know. And they stood to my left, and I thought they were princesses. I had never seen such beautiful people. They had nice, clean dresses on, high heels. I marveled.
They were Dutch women.
They were Dutch women, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I marveled that they had these very high shoes on, because I'd never, what did we know?
Where could you have seen them before?
And they had lipstick on, and I thought, they must be princesses, They were so beautiful. And they were talking and chatting together, which is something you did not do. And so all of a sudden, this Jap came marching down and looked at them, and without any to do, he whacked them both so hard with the butt of his rifle.
Did they fall over?
That they fell over. And in between my legs, because I was in there the next row. They were here and I'm here. And so they fell down and their heads are bleeding and they're lying there. And we had to bow. And so bowing, that's all I could see were these bloody faces with the flies, crawling all over them. I'll never forget it. My beautiful princesses, they were dead. They were dead. And so that's how cruel the Japs were. And when my little brother, the youngest one, mm-hmm. started walking, mm-hmm. He would hate being in my mother's arms the whole time because it could, in the boiling sun, it was just so hot and he'd be crying. And once she put him down and he unfortunately escaped, he ran to the front of the line, just as the commandant was coming by. But my mother left the line and rushed after him because she didn't know what was going to happen to him. So she grabbed him and was back in line when I heard these boots coming down the line, and my heart just about died. And this Jap stopped in front of my mother because she had moved. And she knew that, you know, her time was up probably. And I'm looking at her and she's holding on to the baby and she's looking right at the Jap, right in his face, not angrily or pleadingly or anything, just looked at him like, mother, I had to go and get my child. And I think she got to the Jap because he turned around, you know, clapped his boots together and walked to the front. And but while he was staring at her, you know, I'm thinking,
That he was gonna hit her.
Oh, don't take my mommy away. Don't take my mommy. Please don't take my mommy away. Don't hurt her. And he turned around and left.
Clara, that you're even here telling this story is remarkable. I want to thank you so much for coming on. Really.
You know, it's good for me to talk about it,
get it out. I mean, I know you've had a lifetime to process it, but
I have been so blessed ever since those days. I've been very, very blessed. And here I am again on Vashon. If that isn't a blessing, then I don't know. I mean, it's beautiful.
Well, you left there and then you went to Thailand.
To Holland.
Well, you went to Thailand first, though, to Bangkok.
We went exiting. That's right, yeah.
And then you went back to Holland.
Then we were taken to Holland on a big boat. Yeah, with all these other...
And then from there, you moved to England, which is where you'd then be raised.
Yes, yes.
And that's where Amanda was born.
Yeah.
And here we are, full circle. I want to thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for asking. And I do hope that
you get to... share this book with the school here and anybody that's interested in reading it. It's called The Flamboyantry, FLAMBOYA. It's Memories of a Mother's Wartime Courage by Clara Kelly. Thank you so much, Clara. Thank you so much for listening. This is Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies on KVSH 101.9, Voice of Vashon. Have a great week.